Tom Sparico. What a tremendous honor it is to be sitting across this table from you. From our original LinkedIn conversation 3 years ago to our poolside chat that was supposed to only be 30 minutes, turned into 2 hours. You've become a dear, dear friend and one of my great mentors in this life. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris. The honor is mine and the feeling is mutual.
Now, as we look back on such a tremendous career you've had, your name on over 100 patents, founding team of Priceline.com, so many amazing things in the philanthropic space at St. Jude's. The question that I have for you as you look across your breadth of work and family, as you look towards where you're going in the future, if you could give credit or thanks to one person in your life that you don't give enough credit or thanks to, or just have never thought to give any credit or thanks to, whether it's someone you've never met before or someone you've known your entire life, who would that be?
Yeah, we've talked about this in the past, and so I don't think this answer will come as any surprise. I lost both my parents at an early age, too soon for both of them. But my mother passed away first when I was 15, and I will always say my mother because I never had the opportunity to properly thank her for the impact that she had on my development and my life. And as I've gotten older and more mature and became a parent, the sacrifices and the selflessness that made her who she was, especially in the years that she was sick and leading up to her death, you know, I don't think anything can stack up to that. And what she did for me as one of her four kids and for my father at that time, I will never forget and couldn't possibly begin to thank her properly for that.
Your childhood and when she passed away and you saying that you didn't get a chance to tell her, you know, these things about what she meant. What kind of conversations did you have with your father? Or what kind of conversations did he have with you to get you through that and your four siblings through that chapter?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the answer is not one that I'm particularly proud of. You know, and as an early teenager dealing with a parent with a pretty serious illness, I don't think it comes as any surprise that to hear that I shut down pretty hard. And my father tried very hard to talk to me about it, and just putting this in perspective, I'm the oldest of four kids. And there's between 7 and 10 years difference between me and my siblings. So they were very young at the time, and that's a whole different challenge. But dealing with a child who's between 10 and 15 when she ultimately passed away, the emotions are hitting three times as hard. The concepts are very real. You see the impact of the disease. You're in and out of hospitals. You see the impact it has on your other parent, my father, and I don't think I tried to discuss it at all. I think I tried to just grin and bear it, like any young kid might. And my father tried very hard. I grew up in a Wall Street household, so for a man who spent, you know, his days fighting the fight on Wall Street to come home and try and deal with young kids who are going through something like that, I give him a tremendous amount of credit also. He tried. It wasn't something that I dealt with particularly well.
What is the emotion behind the verb shutdown? Is that, sorry?
No, fear. It's fear. Sadness. There, I remember distinctly the profound sadness after the shock. She was sick for a very long time, and the end was not pretty. And so I remember I was at a friend's house sleeping over, which I might have been at my father's design because I think he knew the end was coming. And I remember him coming to get me and telling me, and there's that shock. Like, you knew something was going to happen. Then you hear that it happens, and you just don't know how to process anything that was going on. And it was almost a numbness that was followed by a profound amount of sadness that I just candidly bottled up. Doing so, I think, caused me a lot of problems later on. It wasn't anger. A lot of people talking to people who've lost parents or loved ones, feel anger at the world. I didn't feel anger. I felt sadness. I think I was so preconditioned to the idea that something was going to happen that I wasn't angry about it. I was just very sad. And the way I tried to deal with the sadness was by being tough about it. That might be the Italian in me. But it took a long time for me to right side from that whole situation. And I will say, when my father passed away, and I was in my 30s, matter of fact, we just celebrated the 10-year anniversary of my father passing.
God bless.
I was very conscious of my emotions. His situation happened very quickly. So he had had cancer, done radiation treatment. As most people know, that's not the cancer that kills you, it's the treatment. Went into the hospital for 2 weeks and essentially passed away at the end of those 2 weeks. And I made it a point over those 2 weeks to emote more. I was dating Carolyn, my now wife. My siblings were older, and I knew that this was the opportunity to say the things I needed to say to him, to emote, and to process and deal with it in a different way. And it felt different. I kind of clicked and said, okay, I get it now. But it was very tough going through that at a young age, especially in the middle of high school. I was a sophomore in high school when she passed away, and your world really gets flipped upside down. My heart goes out to any young children who deal with the loss of a parent at an early age.
That fear, that sadness, that shutting down feeling. How have you repackaged that emotion and used it for positive?
That's a great question. I'd have to probably think about that to answer it directly. I think it's just been, I don't know if I can answer the question, how have I repackaged the emotion? I think, like I just talked about, I dealt with my father passing away in a much different way, not afraid to emote. Not afraid to deal with the reality of his loss, and recognizing that, you know, it's okay to be sad that he's not here and that my parents aren't here anymore, but also to be a better sibling to my three siblings, understanding that their parents aren't here, and whether they like it or not, I'm kind of what they still have.
Getting past the fear of emoting, how has that affected your leadership ability? How has that affected your ability to connect? How has that affected your ability to inspire those around you to believe in what you believe in and follow a path, follow a mission?
I think the biggest impact it's had on those things is that I've been through a lot. Somebody once said to me, a friend of mine's wife said to me, like, I don't know how you walk around on a daily basis with some of the things that have happened to you. And I don't view it that way. I view it as life. Life is life. You know, the sweet is never sweet without the sour. You know, difficult things happen to all of us. And in terms of my ability to lead or inspire, if I can show people that I've been through tough things, and mind you, relative to what other people are going through in this world to this day, I view myself as being very lucky, right? I have a happy and healthy wife and son and great siblings and a growing expanded family, and, you know, have been successful at varying degrees in business and have great friends. And so I look at myself as having a great life, even though very difficult things happen to me or have happened recently. And I try and use that experience to show people that no matter what they're going through, they can make it through. They're going to be fine. To recognize that life has its ups and downs, and as long as you process those downs the right way, you're going to be better off as things turn around and improve.
How often does that fear and that shutting down, how does that creep into your life now, and what do you do when you acknowledge it and you try to move through it?
I think it creeps in every day to some extent. I try and have a conversation with myself when I feel the fear impacting decision making specifically. I had a conversation about this yesterday with somebody from the Yale School of Emotional Intelligence, and you know, we were talking about how to recognize how emotions impact state of mind and decision making. And I think for me, the tool, or as she calls it, the process that I use is to recognize the emotion. It's okay to be emotional, and make sure that it's not impacting behavior or decision making. Specific to the situation with my parents, quite candidly, whenever that stuff does creep back up, and there are times, again, it was 10-year anniversary of my father dying 2 weeks ago. There are a couple things I do, right? It's either, you know, talk to my siblings, or, you know, toast our parents, or, you know, even go to the cemetery, which I actually don't do enough. But I would say about 4 or 6 weeks ago, I just went up there one afternoon by myself and just had a conversation with them. And, you know, those little things go a long way to recalibrating, so to speak.
What do you think was the favorite thing your mother learned from you?
Favorite thing my mother learned from me? That's a great question, Chris. I think that, I don't know. That's, she learned from me. Probably the first thing that she learned from me, and the greatest thing she learned from me, was the joy of motherhood. I was her first child. You know, just knowing what TJ means to me, I know that has a pretty profound impact on you as an adult. My mother was a very special person, and you know, anyone who knew her will tell you that. And her selflessness, especially in a battle with a horrible disease, was really incredible.
What's one constant story you tell TJ about your mother to help him get to know her better?
So TJ is turning 4 on Monday. We have talked to TJ about Grandpa Tom and Grandma Dee Dee, told him that they're in heaven. We've kind of tried to explain the concept of heaven using the loss of his Uncle Drew's dog, which, you know, listen, for a 2 or 3 year old, you kind of put it in terms that they understand. We've taken him to the cemetery, and I think that, you know, as he gets a little bit older, probably 5, and there are pictures of my parents throughout the house, and he knows that's daddy's dad and daddy's mom and so on and so forth. He'll be in a better position, probably emotionally and in terms of his intellectual development, to have a conversation about them. But right now it's snippets, stories, pictures, things like that, things that he can kind of respond to. I think it's probably still premature by about a year to get into the deeper conversations. A, I'm not sure I'll remember him, and B, you know, for a 3-year-old turning 4, as advanced as he is, it's probably a little bit early.
If your mom was sitting across the table from you right now instead of me, this short guy with the fanny pack, what would you say to her?
Just that I love her very much, and I'm eternally grateful for everything she did, and that I wish she was still here to see TJ. Carolyn's parents just were here for a week and went home, and there's never a day that goes by that I don't wish that his other grandparents were here, especially her.
Well, cheers to Dee Dee.
Thank you.
And to Big Tom.
To Big Tom. That's right.
Any words in closing?
You know, for anyone listening, you know, advice I would give anybody is, you know, cherish the ones who are around you, because you don't know how long you have with them. Everyone should always deeply appreciate their parents. I think for us, as we're older, that's easy to do. For younger people, it might be easier to butt heads a little bit. And yeah, I think, you know, it's just important to understand what you have. And no matter how bad your day gets, no matter what challenges you have, just focus on the things that are good in your life and you get through.
You heard it from the man, folks. Go out, take a moral inventory of the people you love in this life, and realize it's your job, it's your duty to go show them that love in the way that they want to hear that love, right? From the famous 5 love languages. Speak love in their language, not yours. Please go check out everything Tom's doing at brandnewmatter.com, at Curativity Foundation, and the great work they do for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. He's truly changing the world, one child at a time, and it's a beautiful thing. I hope y'all are having a phenomenal day on Earth. Remember, folks, it's your world. Go explore, and we'll see you next interview.